You're listening to the Brian Crabtree Show on demand. Catch Brian live and local weekdays starting at 4 on Biz 1190. Replay at 9 p.m. on AM 920 The Answer. Details at biz1190.com.
One of the things that would turn the corner a bit here that has been a conversation for a while is the police forces of America. And I vacillate between defending them and being a little upset at them from time to time, but generally understanding that they're greatly needed. Detectives, police, the judicial system, and it operates here in America far better than in most countries or all countries around the world, but it's still flawed in many ways. And to comment on that is Dennis Ross. He's an Atlanta-based writer and advocate for justice reform. He's got a book he's published, How to Convict an Innocent Man. And it's an interesting timing of this conversation. I've been following three cases that the evidence certainly points to, if you look at it on the surface and get a little deeper into it, as if these folks are innocent. And I'm going to bring those cases up and ask his comment in the context of his book. Dennis, great to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
I want to play a little bit of a case that's been ongoing here for a while in the Atlanta area, which is from Scott Davis case. I'll just play the audio from CBS 46. They did a story on this a while back. Inmate Scott Davis, who has been convicted of murder. There's, according to the attorneys, no evidence or unsubstantiated evidence at best. Anyone anywhere in his case should be convicted of anything, and yet he's serving a life sentence. Let me play a little bit of that.
I was outraged. This is a kangaroo court.
Scott Davis, now 50, is serving a life sentence at Phillips State Prison in Buford. Since his conviction in 2006, the Davises have been fighting for his freedom, claiming investigators mishandled evidence, prosecutors pushed ahead anyway, and Fulton County Superior Court Judge Tom Campbell looked the other way.
I couldn't believe that Judge Campbell, that he kept letting them put this evidence up there. Evidence that we had never seen.
So I'm sure you talk about this in your book, evidence that surprises the defense and they're caught blindsided in the middle of a trial and they're not prepared to disprove it. Did you comment on that?
Yes, it's even more disturbing than that. The Scott Davis case highlights one disturbing trend, that is, evidence is no longer needed to convict the accused in the United States of America, and I think all three cases you're going to mention deal with that. In Scott Davis's case, there's not only evidence that was not presented to the defense, there's missing evidence, there was bad faith. Let me deal with one of them. Missing evidence, between 1996 and 2005, those who were investigating the death of David Coffin, who is the deceased in this particular case, for whom Scott Davis was convicted of murder, evidence was collected, evidence like the murder weapon, DNA samples, clothing, various pieces of evidence. Between 96 and 2005, this evidence was in the custodial care of the Atlanta Police Department. Right before Scott Davis was indicted and sent to trial and convicted, all of the evidence disappeared. That cannot be overstated. Every piece of evidence that could have been exculpatory in nature, that could have proven the innocence of Scott Davis, disappeared. So on one side of the conversation, it's one thing to have evidence existent that can be tested and then can exonerate the accused. But what do you do when the evidence that can set you free disappears from those who are in charge of keeping it so that you have due process and have a fair trial? That is what happened. The second part, and I took a statement from what you said in your last segment, Brian. You said what is in someone's heart is unseen. You cannot prove what's in someone's heart. Scott Davis's attorneys argued because this evidence was missing, it disabled him from having a fair trial. The response was a principle called bad faith. That is, if you cannot prove there was malicious intent in losing the evidence, then you still can go forward with your trial because they did not mean to harm you. In other words, you have to find intent, which, of course, intent is a ghost. It cannot be found. And harm does not check with intent before it harmed you. So Scott Davis went into his trial with missing evidence that could have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was an innocent man and remains so today. On top of that, you could not prove the detective Chambers, Detective Walker, all of the individuals involved in this case lost the evidence on purpose, therefore the trial can go forward. And then thirdly, new evidence has come out since the trial, especially dealing with the police interrogation of Davis that particular night, where there was supposed to be one tape when there were actually two tapes, and the detective now has admitted, which turned out to be a master tape turned into the court that was altered to make it sound like Scott made a confession. So there are so many disturbing elements of this case that it just strains the credibility of our justice system that one can receive a life sentence. And the left, Brian, would have us believe these are just minority defendants, these are just indigent defendants. That is an absolute lie. Scott is none of those. He's an educated young man, graduated from UNC Chapel Hill, MBA from Georgia, had none of the particulars, the ethnic or the social variables one would think would be sensitive to such a terrible outcome, yet he sits in jail, an innocent man right now, awaiting a new trial. Hopefully that will be granted to him in a few days.
You may not realize this. You said something that struck a nerve with me that's a little off subject, but it also speaks directly to this. And I had this conversation with my wife about 2 weeks ago. By the way, we're talking to Dennis Ross, author of the book, How to Convict an Innocent Man. And specifically to the Atlanta PD, I don't want to ever make those guys as a whole feel unwelcome or unappreciated for the service and the risks they put in serving our community and keeping us safe, because that's what they do ultimately. But I've had a couple of instances in the last 6 months where part of the culture that's being talked about, it was evidence to me. One of them was where I tried to get to a cop and say, hey, listen, somebody about ran me over down the street. And I was dismissed and rejected. Well, there's a cop that sits there during lunch. And I wanted to say back, but in not being a smart aleck, I didn't say anything. Well, they certainly didn't see the car that ran the red light. And then the second one was an instance where a cop was just in the middle of the road blocking the road. And I called his precinct, his wherever their police station was. And I said, hey, I got a complaint. And I got yelled at by this police officer for complaining about the traffic being blocked in Atlanta. And my point is that there's a lot made of how the police are racist, or they're profiling, or they're going after one or the other in the community. But there's more of a culture that we're talking about here that, and I said to my wife, I said, every white man faces this as well. But we've heard a lot about how it's happening in the black community, and we're really missing a very easy fix to a big problem. Is a lot of these cops have big egos. They want to win the case. They want power over people. They don't respect the citizens in the community. And this is happening regardless of race. It just happens to be that the black community has more crime, so they're there more often. That's a sad fact. And then you've got these kind of cases where cops are taking circumstantial evidence and they're kind of cutting corners and getting to convictions. I mean, that's essentially, I don't know the merits of whether Scott Davis is guilty or not, but I've seen a lot of these cases, and sometimes I see the arguments made, and I go, how can they know that? They're just guessing. They're doing what everybody else in America does, is they're coming to an expedient, easy conclusion without fully vetting it out. Anything I've said you disagree with?
No, I would not in whole. I will say specifically that one thing I've learned in writing about this case, and just looking at crime and punishment in general, as it relates to white, black, Hispanic, or otherwise, is being innocent today is far more dangerous than being guilty because of the culture you're speaking of. Yes, we can go and circle out certain communities that have more crime than others and find greater cases, but the general problem is, as you said, there's a God complex. And believe me, there are so many police officers. I have police officers in my family, law enforcement. I get it. No one is painting with a broad brush, anyone. But there are too many cases coming to light now where bad police work, prosecutorial motivation that is skewed from fairness, has allowed individuals that should not be locked up to be locked up. The Scott Davis case is so disturbing that it's beyond belief, because there was no forensic evidence, there was no eyewitness, there was nothing, not one iota of evidence that showed him to be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt or logical inference.
But how do we get a jury of his peers, so to speak, 12 members, to sit there and say he's guilty? Is it based upon the emotional appeal that's made, the fact that circumstantially there's no other way to explain it? It's expedient and easy just to say, well, he must have done it. He had connection to the victim.
And you're making a great point. His wife, Megan, they were estranged. The individual who was killed was dating his wife. And so without the presence of evidence, Scott being an innocent man, having a blank palette for the prosecutors to then paint a story on, they did a great job of narrative construction. Essentially, the night he was taken into the police headquarters, Scott made a statement that he knew David Coffin had been killed and he knew he had been shot. On that one sentence, his entire conviction was hanged. And why? Because the police found a body, the firemen found a body in the burning ashes of the home where David Coffin was found, but they did not yet know he had been shot. They didn't know if he burned from the fire and whatnot. And so the only individual who would have known that was, of course, the murderer and the murdered. And so he explained that very simply because Megan, even she admits, she called him that night and told him David had been shot. But when they called her back and said, did you say this to Scott? She said, no, I told him he had been killed, but I didn't say how. And so you may say, hey, that's just a minor difference there. But literally him supposedly knowing, yeah, foreknowledge of how he was killed, not that he was killed, was the only, quote, parenthetical evidence they had to say, well, he must have been the killer. And on top of that, the jury did not hear of all of the evidence that could have set him free. They were not allowed to.
One of the things that I'm thinking about as I'm hearing you talk about that, because I remember watching that, I think, on 48 Hours, because this Atlanta-based case has been on, it was 48 Hours on CBS, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I remember thinking about it, and I heard some of the police interviews, and I've seen this on a multitude of coverage, both on news channels and on these 48 Hours type shows, where there's always a lot made of the reaction of the spouse. I'll call them the spouse for the sake of argument. When the wife, for instance, dies, well, he reacted odd. And I almost overwhelmingly every time I look at my wife, if we're watching this together, I go, how am I supposed to react if something happens? Am I supposed to be hysterical? Am I supposed to slip my wrist? Do I jump up and down and scream? Do I cry emphatically? Am I in shock? I mean, how can I hate that police do that. That's the one thing that makes me willing to have this conversation, is because they all have an opinion of how someone should behave once someone they love has died. Yeah. And sometimes people are so in shock, they don't do it. They're just numb, right?
Well, this is very true. And an individual from person to person obviously has a different character makeup, and you're going to react. Some people would win the lottery today and just barely crack a smile and go into tears, and another person would jump so high they would break their leg on the way down. So you cannot judge, you know, someone's response to something like that. In my opinion, it comes down to this. If you're going to convict a man or a woman in these United States where we promote justice for all, there must be evidence beyond simply hearsay, beyond a reaction that you do not think is psychologically consistent with an innocent person. There has to be more. Now, within the framework of there being 10 other pieces that point to a person's guilt on top of them having a birthday party after someone is murdered, then I can see a trending taking place. But to rely on a conviction that has no scientific certainty, to me, is the reason why Scott Davis deserves a new trial, and we believe the federal judge will grant him one.
Well, I had three cases I was going to talk to you about. We'll have to have you back because we didn't even touch those. Just one case, the twists and turns. Your book, you're Atlanta-based, right? How to Convict an Innocent Man, Dennis Ross. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian. You have a wonderful day.
You too. We'll have him back. That was quite an interesting account. I got more out of that than watching 48 Hours.
Thanks for listening to the Brian Crabtree Show on demand. Don't forget to catch Brian live and local weekdays starting at 4 on Biz 1190. Details at biz1190.com.